Hey, you are listening to the Bug Bounty Podcast. I am your host, Fisher. In today's episode, we have one of the best bounty hunters in the scene and a very good friend of mine, OXCCB. In this episode, we talk about how to be successful, music and hacking, and how to reach Cosmic Brain Level 10. Sit back, relax, and enjoy. Alright, my dude, OXCCB, thank you so much for coming. You're such a big star and busy, so I really appreciate you taking the time to come here. And, you know, you were in the backlog for quite a few time now, so it's really great to have you here.
What's up, Fisher? Thank you so much for inviting me in the first place. First of all, let me say that I loved the previous episode with Stoke. It was such a great idea, my friend.
Thank you. I really hope that these episodes and basically this podcast really helps, to shed some light on some of the bug bounty hunters and people in the community. Because I really don't like the, the way that some of the new guys look up to the bigger guys, like, oh, they are stars, they are like the best guys in the business. But it's like, you know, you're a normal guy. I mean, obviously you're super skilled and you devote lots of time and work to accomplish what you did. But it's like, you're a normal dude. I mean, you're obviously intelligent and hardworking, but I mean, I think someone else could also do what you do if they put in the same hours that you did, which were a lot.
Yeah, for sure.
Or at least achieve some degree of success, not necessarily the same as yours, because you're like a different case, but at least have some success, right?
Yeah, for sure. As long as you are persistent, and if you're not, you just try to dream about your goals and set your goals and set the timeline and try to learn. Try to really learn, not just like try to, yeah, okay, that's a payload. You need to understand how things work and how techniques work. You need to be a creative person, but you need to understand everything that you're doing from the beginning of your journey on this field. And yeah, if you're persistent, you'll achieve anything you want.
Yeah, I think that's sort of like a concept that you can apply to any area of your life, which is, discipline and hard work and persistence. And if you apply that to basically any field of your life, be it your work or, your studies or, for example, fitness, I mean, you should be able to achieve some success. But I was kind of wondering that mindset that you have, is it something that you developed over the years, even before you started hacking, or was it something that, you started fostering and creating when you started with the CTFs? Because that's something that it struck me when I met you and when we started hacking together, which was the fact that you were really persistent and you basically set a goal, like a cosmic goal, like I'm going to do this takeover thing. And you basically don't sleep until you do it, and you're able to spend like 2, 3, 4 days basically hacking on the same thing all that time and not focusing on anything else besides that.
I've always tried to understand computers, and also a fun thing that made me like this was that my mother didn't allow me to stay like more than maybe half an hour on the computer per day when I was like 6 or 7 years old, because he was afraid that because of my eyes. And I tried to automate things because of that at a certain point. I started like trying to make my time on the computer efficient to learn new things. And I started reading some programming books, and I managed to, I have always developed interest about security. I started learning about overcoming limitations, and that made me a persistent person from the beginning. And that's why I can be for like, I can set a goal, like for instance, like account takeover on XYZ. And I try that even like for months, you know, because I want to do that. I want to pop that critical on a given company. And sometimes it just appears at front of you at a certain point. For example, my Shopify RC, the SSRF to RC, like I started exploring the screenshotting feature like 3 months before I achieved the RC. So you can set your goals and you know, you can try different approaches, but if you set a given goal that you want to, like, I've always set the goals like this, even in programming. When I was learning programming, I was setting goals like build this project that does this or that. And I do the same about bug bounty sometimes, because I just set the goals and I try to find a path in the big black box server side of things. And sometimes it works. Sometimes the stars are aligned and it just works.
Yeah. I think also goals and objectives are really something, you know, so important in life in general. My issue with that actually in the bug bounty scene is that so many of the new guys, you know, when they look up to the other dudes who are more experienced, and they see their goals, and their goals are things that can be crazy for other people, like getting 1 million in 1 year, or 500K or 100K. And I don't know, I feel like it's a common standard practice of our industry. And I don't feel that is helpful, because so if you are starting and if you look at that, you can be demotivated. And on the other hand, if you try to make that goal yours, it's like, I mean, you have to be realistic. You have to spend a lot of time, and sometimes just not feasible. I mean, if you're Doggy G, maybe you can do the 1 million thing, or Santiago. But I mean, if you're starting out, you can sort of forget that.
Yeah, I definitely agree. But, you know, I don't set money goals. I've been thinking that
exactly
for 2020, but like I was thinking, oh, it would be cool like to reach like 500,000 on Hackerone total this year. I know it's possible, and I'll definitely try to do that. But I'm more like setting goals, you know, not only for the events, but also outside of the live hacking events. Like multiple account takeovers on multiple big companies. And I've been trying to do that. I have another goal, like to start hacking on another big customer and try to like achieve remote code execution on lots of machines. I set those goals like and more for the events, like try to pop at least like one or two criticals on like San Francisco or whatever. And I'm more like objectives and goals just drive me better than like money goals, you know. Like some months I make like five figure. And there are months that I make like 3 figures or like 0, because I'm just been like relaxing, or bounties are delayed, or, you know.
Yeah.
And yeah, I just want to be better above that. Just want to learn more like cosmic things, more techniques, try to find more techniques on my own. Mm-hmm. What works better in bug bounties and like real life hacking. And yeah, that's all how I think mm-hmm. about the like my bug bounty management.
Yeah, I definitely agree, especially on the mindset that you have, which is always learning. And that also ties with the fact that if you're in the scene, you really have to be humble about it, because if you reach a point where you think like you're the best or you're really good, and I mean, you can have that confidence and you should have once you reach a point, but you should never think that you're above someone else, because sometimes sure. you're like doing this program and you're hacking this application and some other dude who has been hacking for like 2 or 3 months finds a critical that you might have not found. And because sometimes, you know, it can be so things that are so like easy that you don't even think about looking for them. And that's fresh look that someone else can have, you know, can also yield some results. But on the objectives and goals that you were talking about, I also feel that your approach is probably the best, because setting monetary goals is something that's very, I feel, relative and chaotic. I mean, and also the way that you achieve that is very different from the mindset of achieving high and critical bugs, because realistically in the bug bounty scene and current state of it, you can get lots of money by, for example, just submitting XSS, right? And that's just a fact. And, you know, nothing wrong with that. That's not being a farmer. But that's one strategy of earning money, right? And I feel that if you're looking just for criticals and that cosmic stuff that you're looking for, you won't necessarily reach that. I mean, you can, but it feels to me that
it's harder, it's a challenge.
Yeah. So what I'm saying is that, you know, if you are looking for low, medium bugs, I mean, that are not very difficult to exploit, basically, then you can sort of predict the rewards and the payments that you will have. While on the other hand, if you're just looking for the high and critical and cosmic stuff, I mean, you're not exactly sure if you're going to achieve that the same money, because it's a bit more relative. Like, it can happen, but it can also not happen. And I think you also have that experience where in some of the events that you go, you have that goal of popping a critical by some cosmic stuff, and sometimes it happens and some other times it doesn't happen.
Yeah, definitely. Like, I mean, I think I could probably sometimes invest time in those like medium severity bugs, I'll be probably successful, but I see it as a challenge, as I want to get things harder and harder for me to achieve, and like more complex and more impactful, you know, for even like more impactful for the world, you know, like, because I've had some bugs that affect like millions of other people, and yeah, and that's a little bit scary sometimes, but I want to, you know, I want to learn more and set higher goals every mm-hmm. year, you know. And I mean, I don't necessarily feel pressure. I mean, if you have like a money goal, or you're just, oh, I need to submit like 20 bugs per month or whatever, I mean, if you're a little bit behind, you'll feel pressure, you'll feel stressed, you know. And I'm more like living in a different style regarding this. It's like when it happens, it happens. Mm-hmm. I just invest the time and I know it will happen. If like my goal A doesn't happen, maybe goal B will happen, you know, or a different thing that I never thought about and it just popped in my browser or, yeah. You know. And I feel more relaxed doing this than actually, you know, trying to find bugs every single day. You know, I'd rather like just turn to the bug bounty side for the weekend and just like do all the other work during the week. And sometimes I feel more into hacking because, you know, I'm feeling that like something that I'm thinking about, even like when I'm sleeping sometimes or trying to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think about like some ideas about some situations I had before or some behaviors that I had before on a given company. And I just try to organize those features and try to find like new paths to achieve something. And I try it and sometimes it works, but it's pretty rare. But I love to do that, honestly. Like thinking, not being in the front of the computer, just, you know, sometimes even watching like Netflix or whatever, like you go out for a few minutes in the movie or, you know, or on that Rick and Morty episode or, you know, and you think about like something, you don't know why you started thinking about it, but you think about it and you come up with like new and fresh ideas to try on. Not only on bug bounties, like, I mean, on your life sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's, you know, that's really weird. And I think that's a really good take on the whole life balance and work balance thing, especially with bug bounties, because I don't think people realize how the creative side of bug bounties is important. I mean, clearly there's a side which is, you know, doing the grind, putting in the hours, doing research, doing the CTFs, doing, you know, some challenges, basically learning. But there's a time where you really have to be creative. You have to be able to come up with scenarios and have ideas that basically distinguish yourself from the other researchers, because it's the same thing that I was mentioning. Like if you're only looking for the XSS, then it's not that hard to basically predict where those could happen. Right. But if you're doing an account takeover, then not only you have to have such knowledge of the app, but you also have to think of all of these scenarios. You have to think about how the app works, how the different, aspects and microservices of the app communicate with each other.
Yeah.
And, you know, yeah, that creative side, it's really important. And I think also it's one of the aspects that makes it so hard, because if you're doing the grind and you're working like 5 or 6 days a week doing like 8, 9, 10 hours of bug bounty, then you won't have the mental capacity to reach that creative aspect
and organize your brains.
Yeah. Yeah. Like you won't be able to. So I would say that's a really good tip for people who want to basically increase their impact and increase the bug's severity that you're finding. And it's weird because you're basically just suggesting people to not work as much, right? It's like diversify, do your hobbies, play guitar, do Netflix and chill. I don't know. I feel that that's like weird, but also it makes sense.
Yeah, and we'll definitely see, we'll see more, you know, these logical bugs in future more, because it's like security can evolve, and like it's evolving obviously every day as research goes on. But, you know, like maybe in 5 years, things will be different, and like developers will be like super careful, like stuff will be like, and is being already reviewed by, you know, even maybe AI powered, like whatever, that understands that there is a bug on your code, you know, and like you probably don't have XSS, maybe on some old servers, you know, like we have SQL injections today, you know. And yeah, maybe, you know, I've been thinking about some stuff. Like when I'm doing some testing, I'm always using Burp and proxying my traffic. But there are some logical bugs that like, or behaviors that I don't need Burp. Like I just need 2 or 3 browser sessions and steps and go back and, you know, like doing some nasty things to the server, like some stuff that they didn't think about, you know, like they can be super careful about like the implementation, but there's like a path of like some order of operations that will create something that is not intended at all, you know?
Yeah.
And you can navigate on that, you know, like you can try to build paths. You can try to, you know, like remove your user B, transfer ownership to user C, like delete both at the same time, like add a different one, see if it falls back to the third email. Like, you know, like doing like steps at different moments in time. I mean, if you focus more on your browser and you minimize Burp when you start your testing, you'll understand it better. You're using it as a user, not like right up modifying things in Burp.
I know what you
know.
Yeah,
that's helped me a lot, and I've been doing that. I've been realizing that, but. Regarding the life balance that you talked about, like last year was a little bit crazy for me, because we had I had so many live hacking events.
There was like 8 or 9.
I think more. Like I don't really remember, but almost every month I had to go somewhere because it's my job. It's like I want to deliver. Exactly. I see it as a job. Like. I want to deliver, and we all on events want to deliver. Like, even if you're like really good and you know, oh, they are going to invite me for the next event for sure. Like, even if I don't submit any bug, but still you'll feel so bad about it, you know? And you'll return home sometimes so happy, and other times you return like happy because you saw like your friends, like your family. I see it as a family as well. Like we are not just friends, like we act things together, and that's fucking special. And like I was saying, like last year was crazy, and I mean I was like not doing anything else when I went to the event city, you know, like I just went there and like act 24/7, you know, and like sleeping like 5 hours per night or even less. I remember like Techno Geek always sleeping like 5 hours and waking up like at 3 a.m.
Joel was fucking crazy.
Like, and hacking until breakfast. And
yeah.
I mean, like, it's crazy. It's really crazy because we want to be the best in terms of quality, in terms of quantity, of impact, you know?
Yeah.
And we want to deliver because we love the bounty life, right?
Yeah.
And yeah, and I think that I was living a little bit, you know, like in a random way last year, and I was able to adjust that recently to a normal schedule with normal habits, with like no more Uber Eats, like, you know, like cooking, like relaxing, you know, fixing my sleep, trying to wake up like earlier than usual. Because last year I was like hacking at night. I kind of love it sometimes, but you know, you will not see the sun sometimes if you just imagine that you are still hacking at 3 a.m. and you see something that is crazy and you know that you will pop a shell at some point. And I mean, when you see yourself, you don't have the shell yet, and it's like 8 or 9 a.m. It happened to me multiple times last year. And I mean, that's not very healthy. I could handle it, but I know that if I was like a different person or like a more depressive person, I'll be like fucked up because of it.
Yeah.
But I was able to control it. But still, I didn't feel the best, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I kind of feel better now because of doing more exercise, more sleeping, more like cooking, more, you know, like normal things that helps you a lot. And I'm right now, I feel more with more energy to approach the first live hacking event of the year, which is H1415 in SF in February. And I'm really excited to be back. And I want to crush it.
Yeah, okay? Of course.
And we will all feel like that. Yeah. Sure.
Don't I mean, you? Of course. I mean, that's, you know, that's one of my priorities in every event, which is giving more than 100%. And that's one of the reasons that, you know, I get burned down so easily, because after the events, I'm so fucking tired, you know, mentally and physically, because as you said, that routine and schedule that we have on the live events and even the preparation before it, it's really hard on your mind, on your body, because, you know, sometimes maybe you are finding things and that sort of fuels you, but sometimes you're also spending lots of time without getting, you know, results. And that's so fucking stressful because, as you said, you want to deliver. And it's interesting that even though you are an MVH, you have that mentality of, you know, it's like you have this responsibility of delivery.
Yeah,
of
exactly.
Trying to, and it's not only like you mentioned, quantity, is you wanna achieve quality because you like wanna
impress.
Yeah, exactly. Basically. You want the clients of the life hacking events to really feel like they had some value, you know?
Exactly. Yeah.
Things that no one else would find, that a normal pen test would not find. So
that made me really happy on some events last year. And when I got the MVH in 2018 in BC, and like, there were like, those were like one of those happiest moments in my life, because I was really proud of my achievements. And like, maybe 3 years ago, I thought that this wasn't possible for me, but I just tried. And at the beginning was like, oh, when am I going to get my first bounty? Oh, and then it happens. And after that, you just get a different kind of fuel, you know, and you feel more confident and you'll achieve beautiful things if you put the effort and if you are persistent and if you farm your creativity. And if you take care of yourself, if you put time into yourself, and I didn't do that so much last year. Like I kind of ignored me sometimes. And yeah, that's living like in a random way, in my opinion. Yeah. And you need to, if you're living like that, you definitely need to stabilize that.
Yeah.
Otherwise you can, you know, as I said, like you can have like some kind of burnout or you need to avoid that definitely. But one thing I like about you, Fisher, is that when we go like to the event, you try to keep your regular life, even if you're jet lag, like minus 10 hours or like you eat the gym like at 6 or 7 a.m. the next day.
Yeah.
You know, like, and I go to the gym sometimes with you, but you go like more times than me because I, one of those days we said like, okay, let's go to the gym tomorrow. And I just find something and I just go with it. And I stop acting like at 4 a.m. Yeah. And I just don't go to the gym. And that's, I still want to figure out like some balance between that.
Yeah.
And my success, you know, like a balance. And I want to try to improve that this year for the events. And I try to go to all the activities on the events every time. And that makes you have less time to hack.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also very important. And,
And fun.
And yeah, and fun, and you create relationships, you meet new people,
you learn about things,
you learn, you talk about everything, your life, your relationships, your, you know, like your bugs, your techniques, your ideas, you know, and you, and we have fun together.
Yep.
And that's fun. And I've been trying to, before I got like my schedule right, I thought about like even if I sleep like 5 hours this night,
mm-hmm.
I prefer to go to this social activity because I always wanted to, you know, be like social, but you know, I want to create like relationships and meet new friends. And that's always like one of my priorities for life and not just for the events. And yeah, you need to find like a balance again between like the acting part and the social part and your self part.
Yeah. You know, in the, you know, bounty life, it's definitely amazing, but people don't realize how hard it is, you know, for your mental health and, you know, your body, because you're always traveling, you have so much stress that basically you're the one that you're putting the stress on yourself, because, you know, you feel this responsibility and you want to hack and you want to provide value. But that's, you know, that balance is, it's quite hard to achieve, especially on the events, because you're away from home, you can't cook, you don't have a gym necessarily, and you have all of these activities that are planned, and on top of that you want to hack, but you also want to go to the activities.
And sometimes you have problems at home, like I remember, for instance, like we had like a hurricane and we were in Canada, and then we were worried about like there was no phones here in some cities in Portugal.
Yeah.
And yeah, like we were away and we couldn't call like our family. Only after a few hours, and it wasn't on the day of the event. It was with Shopify and in Montreal. And yeah, that always also, you know, like you're away, but you still need to take care of some things.
Exactly.
And you also need to take that into account when you're planning your hacking schedule, you know?
Yeah.
And that's really important.
Definitely. You know, I really like sort of biohacking. So basically trying to optimize my state in terms of energy and mental capacity and physical capacity. That's why, you know, I like to go to the gym and do surfing and all the other activities, because I feel that, at least for me, that really works. And I think that's what people need to do, which is they need to find the things that work for you. Like if you work really well at night and that's when you produce most of your results, then, I mean, you can keep doing that as long as, for example, you sleep, right? I mean, for me, that's one of the most important things. And I also really struggle on the live events, because not only you are jet lagged, but like you want to hack with the other dudes. And for example, for me, you know, I know that everyone is hacking and it's like 11 p.m. and I'm always the first going to bed, and I feel super bad because I know all of the other guys are hacking, and I'm like, yeah, I'm going to sleep because I need my sleep so I can wake up early, can go to the gym and so on. But that's one thing that works for me, right? And that's what everyone has to do and find, which is what works for you, and you do you and keep doing it. Because if that works and that's what makes you, you know, have the energy and mental capacity and so on, then you have to do it like all the time. I don't think many people knew that you also play the guitar. I think I heard you saying that you also played other things like piano and drums.
Yeah, kind of. I took a guitar course, you know. I'm not actually used to the guitar right now. I still, you know, I kind of miss it because... yeah, I should play more, probably, again. But yeah, and I also love, like, computer, like, synthesizers. I've had, like, a band, and we still have it, but it's, like, in kind of standby. And, like, I played the electric guitar and also electronics. And all the sounds were made with a computer keyboard that I learned to play with a computer keyboard. Yeah, so, and music always helped me as well. You know, lately I've been not actually playing the guitar or that stuff. I've been, like, making some songs, electronic songs, from music that, you know, like... I listen to different types of music when I'm hacking. I tried lots of types of music, and I can. I like multiple types of music, you know. But when I listen to some types of electronic music, like uplifting trance, or even like some cosmic techno and you know, with some uplifting like tracks and some uplifting melodies as well.
Do you remember the name of the song or the artist or playlist that we were listening on the last event, which was from Tomorrowland?
Opus?
Yeah, Opus. That was pretty cosmic.
Opus is a cosmic song. Yeah. But yeah, I noticed that other hackers on the event listened to trance, and I was like, oh, interesting. And I started like producing some songs lately in my free time, because I didn't need music in my life. And I've been like making some experiences, some tracks from music that I would like to hear when I'm hacking.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm still developing that for, you know, people to hack or something. But yeah, and but yeah, music helps you with your creativity as well. There are people that say that when you learn music and you grow and you're learning music at the same time, like you kind of develop like something, you know. I don't really know how to explain it properly, but it's not like your brain developing in a different way. Maybe it is, but like you can be really creative if you study music, in my opinion. And I know lots of people in the hacking scene that play music, mm-hmm. or like even like computer geeks, or mm-hmm. you know. And I think that helps with you being persistent, because you want to learn a song and how to play it on the piano, the guitar, whatever. And that makes you persistent as well. And I forgot to mention that in the beginning when we talked about persistence and, you know. But I think it's also something like, even if you don't want to learn how to play music or music in general, maybe you can just try to find what suits better for you, and for you to concentrate and be on your own and trying to, you know, you can try to abstract from the environment to be, you know, more concentrated into your goals. And and I think that's important. And lots of us listen to music while we are hacking.
Mm-hmm.
Some people listen to one track for 7 hours, the same track.
Like yourself?
No, not me. Not me.
Not you?
No, not me. But for example, when I'm hacking, sometimes I just like listen to some trance, and I just I feel like motivated, and we have like a fast rhythm, and you can get cosmic easily.
Yeah.
I don't know. I've been trying to search for like the perfect music for hacking. But I mean, it doesn't have to be trance or electronic music at all. If you don't like electronic music, it can be like, you know, environmental waves and
mm-hmm.
music, and you know, like ambience sounds,
yeah,
you know,
abstract stuff.
And mm-hmm. abstract stuff, and that also is very interesting. That's why I like the even like the trance music or whatever, with more like ambience, like more, you know, speciality, like the notion of space,
mm-hmm.
of you know.
I mean, I definitely don't know like the science behind it, but what I do know is, you know, when you're listening to that, those type of songs, which have a BPM sort of high, then
of like 140 plus,
it will definitely influence your state, and you will get that bump and that excitement, yeah. and so on. So that really helps. And the other side is, I think some of the trance music, or you know, the ambient stuff you were mentioning, I think some of those might help and induce alpha waves or beta waves or theta waves, something like that, which helps you focusing and so on.
Yeah, that's so, really interesting. That's also a nice research field.
Yeah. No, definitely. Yeah.
I don't know, like about like how our brain reacts to music and stuff like that. But that's a really nice area for research, definitely.
Yeah.
And I know that, for example, in Porto, we have in the Faculty of Engineering, they are exploring, like they have like a sound laboratory and stuff like that.
Nice, didn't know
yeah,
that.
Yeah, and that's interesting stuff.
Yeah, it's super interesting, and you know, From what I know, from my experience, I also started learning guitar when I was like 13. And to be honest, when I started learning, I think it was because it was the same reason as all of the other boys were learning, which was like to impress and pick up girls. That's just the way it is, because every time you would bring the guitar for, you know, to the school or to a party, you know, if you knew just one or two songs, which was, or the classic like Wonderwall or whatever, like all of the girls were like over you. So it was a nice thing. But when I continued learning and I started getting more into blues and basically improvising, I feel that what you were saying started coming up even more, which is the creative aspect of it and also the discipline side of things, because you have to practice so much for so many hours, all of days. And if you start developing those skills early in life, then you can definitely transpose those to the other areas. And in our case, it's hacking.
100%.
So, and it's interesting to see that so many of the top bug bounty hunters actually love music, and so many of them that play instruments. I know that you do. I know that Joel also plays. So it's interesting. And I mean, if you don't have a hobby and you're looking for one, that's definitely a good place to start, because it's actually, I mean, at least I feel that it's not that hard to pick up. Like if you have just a keyboard or a piano or whatever, like you can play some tunes and it's quite easy in the beginning. I mean, it will not be perfect, but it's fun. I mean, and you can sing along also. It's cool.
Yeah. And I kind of have like, not a theory, but you know, like, when you play and you improvise, you are creating something, and I think that we need to have a balance between breaking and building. You know, you need to build stuff for you, for your life. You need to build tools. If you go and you just break, like, and you don't do anything else, and I'm not just talking about the hacking itself, like outside of it, your regular schedule stuff. I think that you need to be on the spot between those that suits you better. For instance, even when I play or I create something or I create some music, but also when I create some habits, when I create, you know, a tool or I automate something or I build a CTF, it's building. You're not breaking. Even if you're building something that it's going to be broken, like a CTF, like that somebody will break in and will get the flag. Mm-hmm. So you need to have a balance between those, you know, to be able to, you know, not being too far on the breaking side.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, I was listening your video interview with Ben Nahemsek, and you talked about programming and how that can help you. And to be honest, I find it very weird to know that so many bug bounty hunters don't do any kind of programming. And that feels so weird, because you can do so much. You can automate so many stuff. You can, you know, develop your own tools. You can, you know, build your custom burp extensions to find things that no one else is doing. And besides, it's, you enter a different state of mind, like you were mentioning, which is also very important. I mean, I also have sort of that balance where, for example, I hack for 1 or 2 weeks and then, you know, I will be busy with other stuff from life. But I also like to continue developing some stuff related to bug bounty.
You kind of miss it. Because you learned it.
You miss it. But, you know, if you're hacking and then you start doing some kind of tooling or you're improving your recon game and so on. I actually find it very relaxing. And, you know, you're still working exactly in the game same. And so, hey, it's really cool.
So it must be true. Like,
yeah. But again, it's like, I don't get, I mean, like yourself, I have a background on computer science. That's what I studied in the university. So maybe it's easier for us, but I mean, still, like, I think about the stuff that I program and I code, and also I only use Python like yourself, and like, it's so easy. Python, it's so intuitive. And when you know just a couple of basic stuff, like, you can do so much stuff. And besides, like, everything that you want to do, it's in the internet, like in Stack Overflow. So if you don't know how to do like a specific thing, like, how do I take these warnings from my code or whatever, like, just write that on Google and someone else has it already. So
yeah, but for instance, like, sometimes when I code, when I search or I get into Stack Overflow because I don't remember something or something like that, and if it is like the first result, obviously, if it is the documentation, I usually click the documentation. But sometimes I end up on Stack Overflow, like, you know, and when I see some code on Stack Overflow, I always try to understand if it is vulnerable, mm-hmm. because it's interesting that people that code the companies, like the software of the companies that you're trying to break into, they also go to those resources. Yes. And if like a given warning of a dangerous function is not so noticeable by someone, maybe you can actually exploit that on like somewhere, you know, or you can get an idea. For example, if I see like a regular expression, I try to understand like if it has like some kind of bug that allows me to have something that is not supposed to be in there, like, for example, an email or, you know, like the email format. So, and you can get some feedback from the server, like if it filters the response, if it, you know, removes weird chatters and so on. And you can try to understand the regex. And like on Stack Overflow or some major websites that have regexes for emails or other stuff, some of those are vulnerable. Okay.
Yeah.
Some of those are vulnerable, and you can try to exploit that if you want, and that's also interesting.
Yeah, and it's definitely a take that I don't think many people even consider. And the thing is, when you think about it, the people who are, you know, building these massive apps that millions of people are using, those guys and girls, you know, they're normal people. So if they have a question, doubt, if they don't know how to do something, they will use the same resources that we use, which is like Stack Overflow and things that are in the internet. So definitely that probably happens a lot. And I would say that's a really good bug bounty tip if you want to dive in, try and understand, because, you know, if you see something related to a specific framework and then you are targeting a website which uses the same framework, then
exactly.
maybe
and,
you can look at it.
And another thing is like when you have some example on Stack Overflow or whatever, that gives you like a server-side code and front-end code, you can try to find that HTML with similar classes and stuff like that. And you can try to understand where it's used if you search on your Burp projects and stuff
mm-hmm,
like that.
Mm-hmm.
And you can try to find where it's used, and the backend code will be probably the same.
Oh,
and
yeah.
that's information that you can leverage
to
do something, or if it contains a bug, even better.
Yeah. I mean, you could even like Google Doc it.
Yeah, as well.
Try to find it more in places. Nice. And, you know, the documentation thing that you talked about is also a skill that you can very easily use on Bug Bounty, because You know, I know a couple of dudes that before they even start hacking an application, I remember, for example, Inti, he basically reads the documentation first. And when you do that, you are learning about the application, you are learning about the potential use cases and so on. And, you know, sometimes you can even find vulnerabilities directly on the documentation. Exactly. Before I've we started, that. We were talking about a bug that I think it was on a bug bash. And the vulnerability was basically an API key, which was in the official documentation. So they were like explaining, you know, how do you generate an API key and how do you use it? And it still worked. It never was revoked and so on. And they paid for it. So it's super interesting.
Yeah, definitely, my dude.
All right. So going a little bit back, still regarding to the music and so on, one of the things that you also do is rap, right?
Yeah, I also like it, you know, like I like to improvise sometimes in Portuguese. I'm not very, very good at it, but I have some fun doing it. I like some rap battles and stuff in Portuguese sometimes.
But the thing is, I know because I've heard already, you have like one or two songs which are just bug bounty related, right?
Yeah, but they are not finished as well.
Okay.
So maybe one day I'll release them, I don't know, but it's I can tell you the story about it. Like I was in Buenos Aires for HackerOne event not last year, because we are in 2020 already, so it's 2018 in September or something. And we were, the event was with the Verizon Media.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I popped.
I remember with Korbnik.
Two
right?
criticals with Korbnik. And we started drinking in the afternoon. So, and then I was in a bar and I decided to write a rap song
mm-hmm.
about bug bounties in English. And then I actually. End up performing that song on the same bar on the same night.
On the same night.
Yeah, because like people noticed that I was writing it and they wanted me to sing it. I don't remember who was trying to convince me, but yeah. And
so it's probably Mark Litchfield.
Yeah, I don't remember. No, Mark wasn't there.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, I don't really remember, but.
But I mean,
it was fun. Yeah.
That has been sort of a staple because I remember that you performed that song like in many events and people, you know, in
some events.
Yeah, in some events, because usually, at least with the events in HackerOne, we all we have the karaoke at the end of the event.
Yeah.
So people always request that song.
Yeah. And Donut also likes to rap.
Oh, yeah, Donut. Yeah, yeah,
and he's
yeah.
a very good rapper as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Cosmic dudes. So talking a little bit more about CTFs, this is something that I wanted to touch. One of the ways that you can apply CTF skills to bug bounty is the mindset. So in CTFs, you have a mindset and basically goals, right?
Yeah.
The goal is to get a flag.
Yeah.
And I remember that, you know, when I started hacking more closely with you and people like Korbnik, I noticed that one of your methodologies was actually to set a goal and try to achieve it no matter what. So for example, in your case, usually it's like an account takeover or shop takeover or whatever. And basically you use that as a way to guide you and you try to do whatever it's needed to reach that goal, right?
Yeah. I kind of feel a little bit, you know, it's kind of different when I hack with a CTF player like Korbnik or TechnoGeek, you know, because we all have similar opinions about some behavior, or even if we don't, we can try to understand together why something is happening. And we actually, even before Disturbance or our collaborated with Cormic, or I don't remember if it was Cormic or TechnoGeek, but we were researching the exact same thing. And that happened to me with the Cash Money as well. He got a similar mindset as well. And we set like the same goals and we dupe each other sometimes. So,
yeah, I think that mindset is really, I mean, it's something that you should have in mind. And, you know, if you don't know exactly what to do, because it's what we were talking about in the beginning, like if your goal is to make money, then you will probably stick to a couple of vulnerabilities. And that's what I usually call a vulnerability-based approach, right? Yeah. But there are other approaches and methodologies. One of those is this CTF mindset. And I mean, you can have so many more, like a stack-based approach or whatever. But I really feel that this one works, especially if you are targeting, you know, high and critical severity bugs.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, on CTFs, sometimes the goal is right in front of you in the description, like flag is on /flag.txt on the server. You're like, okay, we need to get arbitrary file read or RCE, you know, or any possible way to disclose the flag file, you know. And you know what's your goal, RCE or file inclusion or whatever. And you need to understand the features that you have that are just a few and how to use them to or find something weird in some of the features. And then you can start trying some techniques that you learned before or in another CTFs or in real life testing. And that also helps you prioritize features or setting goals in the bug bounty side of things, you know. You think in a different, you have a different approach. That's why all of us are unique, even me and Cormic and TechnoGeek, because TechnoGeek is more into eventually mobile, straight RCE, stuff like that, you know. I'm more into logical stuff, more into also SSRFs and other weird bugs. And, you know, Cormic is also into criticals, also privilege escalation, race conditions, and other cosmic stuff. And we spent some days without finding anything, and other people are not. I'm talking about Disturbance. Like, we used to collaborate together as well before, and that worked really well. And, you know, if you act with friends and if they all also share the same mindset, you will be closer to them in your thinking and you can achieve greater goals.
Yeah.
And with collaboration in general as well, it's the same thing. The point is that you are reducing workload by sharing information and not poking at the exact same stuff and not repeating tasks that are like probably 100% tested, you know, and you can reduce time, and the more time you can reduce, the more you can win as well. So, so it's really cool because in terms of money, it's probably the same, but in terms of impact, it's better for the company.
The impact is greater, but also, as you were saying, the time that you take to reach that, it's much lower because, I mean, that's what I see when we are hacking. It's one guy gives an idea and the other guy gives another idea. Yeah. And it's like you're building the puzzle much faster than you would playing individually. And that's one of the things that I really like about CTFs, which I feel like they are a puzzle, right? But they are sort of a contained puzzle and you know exactly the goal and the thing that you should achieve. Whereas
it's a simulation.
Yeah, whereas with bug bounty, it can still be thought and considered a puzzle, but you don't know exactly which pieces that you need to piece together. And that's why usually when you spend lots of time in one target, like I'm talking days, weeks, even months, then you think about stuff that no one else has thought about because you have such knowledge on the app and its features that you know exactly how you could target it and achieve new things.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Like I love to exploit things that, you know, they will never, or it will be really hard to think about those things because it's like a, could be a zero day on a common library that is used and you don't even know that the bug is right there, and it could be a zero day. You know, finding the piece, where the piece of the puzzle is hard, and it's a knowledge, a step that you won't get from CTFs, obviously, but combining the pieces and exploiting the pieces, exploring the pieces of the puzzle and combining them together is something that you get from CTFs and the techniques involved.
Yeah.
And you can get into extreme scenarios where something is happening and it's extremely unintended because it's a regex or, you know. And I think that we'll see more bugs like that in the future, mm-hmm. as I mentioned multiple times. But
yeah,
by the way, future awaits.
One of the things that I wanted to like ask you and get your take on it is, you know, we see these people who basically start with CTFs and then switch to bug bounties. So, you know, we have you, we have Kornik, we have TechnoGeek, Space Raccoon, for example, which is a really good example because of the success he had in such a short amount of time, like in 1 year. So he started with Hacker 101 and the CTF challenges and so on, and he achieved so much in such a short period of time.
Yeah, that's crazy.
So the thing is, like, why don't more people who play CTFs switch or at least try to do some bug bounty? Like, what do you feel is the thing that it's keeping those players? Because they could, if they put the same time as they put in CTFs, they could get lots of money. But I also wanted to understand, because you did this transition and in the beginning, like you said yourself multiple times, it was quite hard. Like your first event, you didn't find anything, not you or even Gilles, which also plays lots of CTF. So like, what do you think is going on there?
Yeah, so first of all, like I didn't really switch. Like it's more like a transition because I still do some CTFs. I don't do more because, you know, I don't have time. I just don't have time to play, but I've been playing. I played in December in like one CTF. And I'm probably going to the web tasks now because I know much more web today than like 1 year ago. And I can solve some like extremely hard web tasks. And I did that on some CTFs last year. I used to participate like almost every single weekend or even during the weeks, or if there was like three or four CTFs in a single week, like, let's go, you know, like I was studying or I was like, I had time for it and I loved it, you know, and I was like always, always learning. Right now, I switched, like I still do CTFs because I know that's important for me and because I love my CTF team.
Yeah, and you're still the captain, right?
I'm still the captain for now, yeah. And yeah, like we are trying to get more students into the CTF team and set higher goals and achieve them. And there are lots of people on my CTF team that have been helping me because of my lack of time for it that, because of the events. And yeah, and about the CTF players, not like only a few doing bug bounties. One of the reasons it's because on CTFs, one of the categories that are more, you know, like kind of important are binary exploitation,
yeah,
and reverse engineering also, and crypto as well. But, you know, web, it's a nice category and we have lots of interesting and unique challenges. But you go like to some CTFs that are extremely hard, of like the best CTFs in the world, and you don't see web.
Yeah, okay? I remember.
So most CTF players, and even on my team and other teams that I know, CTF teams, they don't have that much people that really know web, you know? Yeah. So I think that's one of the reasons, like, we have lots of CTFs with web tasks, but I don't really know, because people just, and I was a little bit like that. I was a lot into binary exploitation, and I learned how to exploit, to build exploits for the heap, for like rob chains, for, you know, return to leaf C, like lots of techniques and interesting techniques, mm-hmm, for double free. I still love it, to do it sometimes, but right now when I did this transition and I really learned about web, and I complemented my previous knowledge by hacking the real stuff, mm-hmm, by doing bug bounties.
Yeah.
And I think that like real life scenarios, and I know some organizers of CTFs of web tasks, and sometimes they'll tell me on IRC, like, this was based on a real scenario, mm-hmm, like, and it was a web task. And, mm-hmm, I was like, whoa, like, that's really interesting, you know? Yeah. And because people do pen tests, and lots of pen tests are web-based as well, and bug bounties as well, but we also have mobile apps. So reverse engineering, some reverse engineers switch to bug bounties as well. But I mean, the guys from binary exploitation, like, I used binary exploitation knowledge in bug bounties once in like
Buenos Aires?
Yeah, in once, yeah, like
that one, like. You got a critical out of it, right?
It was Korbnik found some crazy stuff and we escalated it,
yeah,
together. And yeah. So, and I used that knowledge in that situation, but, and also when I was reviewing also some code, like low level C or C++ code and stuff like that, I can identify some bugs, you know, and that's important as well. And also the reverse engineering part for reversing like mobile apps and native, mm-hmm, libraries, and removing certificate pinning from like some apps that, you know, that are like pinned on, yep, the native layer.
Yeah, yeah.
For instance, like the Facebook app is React Facebook as well for a bit last year. And like it's like... You need to patch assembly and you need to know that stuff to bypass the pinning. And only a few people on the bug bounty scene know that. And you can have some, you know, can have some advantages for you.
Definitely.
For example, me and Kormanik, like everybody else was looking into that feature, but we were the only ones that were able to exploit it because... Mm. We smelled something there and we did the quit and we used, like we had some crazy ideas together and it worked. And it was a great time as well.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And I see the impact that having those skills, how much you can get in the bug bounty scene. So, for example, one thing that I know and notice is that every time there is a mobile section on a bug bounty program scope, like not many people invest time in it. And the dudes that actually do it, they usually get lots of it, lots of things out of it. And it's interesting because it's an area that not that many people research and invest time. And, you know, for example, in events, I remember you using your skills, for example, for the SSL pinning, patching, and so on. Or, for example, I remember in one of the last events, it was TechnoGeek, and I think it was Cody. They got this bug also.
Yeah.
It was an Android box or some shit like that?
Yeah, some RC client.
Yeah. And, yeah.
All right, my dude, thank you so much for your time. This was amazing as per usual and super fun. And it's one of the reasons it's always so awesome to hack alongside with you. So thanks.
Same, my friend. Thank you for inviting me. And also I'd like to say huge congrats for this idea because it's really cool. And I think that the previous podcast was really cool with Stoke. I really liked to hear it. Keep it up and see you.
Yeah, thanks, man. See you.
That's it for today. If you like this podcast, hit the subscribe or the follow button. I'll see you soon.